Welcome back to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd here, solo for the final hour of the show today as Drance heads down to Nashville. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. I'm coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, and I am now very pleased to be joined by friend of the show covering the NHL for ESPN. He is Ryan Clark. Ryan, I don't know if to congratulate you or offer condolences that you just missed having a chance to chat with Drance, so it's just me, just me.
Well, let's go with congratulations. I'm never disappointed just to be on this show, but the fact it could just be you and I today, that's not a bad thing either.
Yeah, there you go. Less annoyance, less pestering from Drance on the show today. So let's start with the Nashville-Vancouver series, and in a round one where there's been a lot of pretty lopsided series, right? Like even, you know, we thought maybe Florida-Tampa would be a little closer. That ends in five. Colorado takes care of Winnipeg in five. This series has been really, really close pretty much every game. Now it's going to Nashville for game six. What do you think has made this such a tight, kind of really narrow margin series so far?
There's a couple of different things. The first is the Predators' identity in terms of their defensive identity, something that's really ramped up over the last few months. Not that it always comes back to what happened with them in Vegas, but it was sort of that coming to Jesus moment, for the lack of a better phrase, that really saw them pick up their defensive intensity. Whereas of what you've seen with the Canucks is you've seen a team that has been able to not only play well defensively, but they've been able to make the most of the opportunities when they can. But also it goes back to another narrative we've talked about on the show with these two teams, which is of all the first round series, especially in the Western Conference, this was the one that had the most questions, because it'd been years since the Canucks had been in the playoffs with the Predators. They missed it last year. So there was a question of, well, how would this work? Because while, yes, there are Canucks players who've been in the playoffs, to see how this is going to work under Rick Tocchet with the defense that's been reconfigured over the last 7-8 months now versus a Nashville team where, yes, Andrew Burnett has gotten to the playoffs before as an interim coach, as an assistant head coach, but this is his first time doing it as a head coach. And he's doing it with a roster that's really fascinating in the sense of you have three layers of players. You have the layer of players that have won a Stanley Cup, like a Ryan O'Reilly. Yep. You have the layer of player like a Gustav Nyquist or a Roman Josi, who they've been really far but not won a cup. But then you have that layer of player like a Tommy Novak or a Luke Evangelista, in which they just had very little, if any, playoff experience. And so it's one of those things that's made this series so interesting and so compelling. Whereas if you look at some of the other series that you've just talked about, Vegas-Dallas had a feeling that was going to be close, because for some people, they think whoever wins that series has a really good shot of representing not only the West, but possibly winning the whole thing. Whereas if even with Colorado-Winnipeg, for all the things that went Winnipeg's way in the regular season, it was a question of, well, how would this work in the playoffs? And we saw the answer to that question.
Yeah, and I do want to get into those series in a little bit, but sticking with the Canucks and the Nashville Predators here, you know, one of the big talking points coming out of last night's game is Rick Tocchet's decision not to challenge the tying goal. And I know there's been a lot of talk about goalie interference, obviously, from John Cooper, but this is a different play, right? This is the puck is loose in the crease, and there's a battle for it, and then it ends up going in. Do you think Tocchet made the right decision there to say, you know what, I don't have enough confidence here, we're not going to challenge this one?
It's hard to say, because if you win that challenge, we're having a different conversation. If you lose that challenge, then Nashville gets an extra attacker in a series where margins have been so small that if you, let's say, lose that challenge, they score on that power play, then it becomes a question of, well, then why did you take that challenge? So sometimes maybe the best move is to not make a move at all. But either way, the Canucks still were in control in terms of the series. They still have a 3-2 series lead. If this is maybe they're trailing in the series or it's 2-2, possibly it's different, but they still have the upper hand as of now. So it's one of those, if the Canucks win, maybe people look back and say what could have been different. But if this is a series the Predators come back to win, then certainly it's going to be one of those decisions people are going to look at throughout the course of the offseason and wonder, well, did they make the right decision? And if not, then what could have been?
Now, I think one of the interesting things is, so this team was on the brink. They have that incredible, I mean, on the brink of advancing. They have that incredible comeback in game four, like unbelievable, steal a win in Nashville. You have a chance to put the team away at home. You don't get it done. Play pretty well, but just come up short. Now you got to go back to Nashville. And I'm really curious to see kind of the psychological response. As you said, that's one of the big talking points coming into this series, this postseason for the Canucks, is how do they respond to this first real playoff environment? And I think this situation in particular, where you didn't make the most of an opportunity to advance, now you got to fly back and play in the other team's home rink, that can be pretty challenging. I'm very curious to see how the team responds to that on Friday.
Well, it's challenging, but at the same time, hasn't this been this playoff run for the Canucks? You've gone through three different goaltenders. Yep. You've seen different players emerge as sort of heroes. You've seen moments when your depth has worked. You've seen moments when it hasn't worked. And you've been playing in a series in which practically every game has been a one-goal game. So the fact that they're going back to Nashville to try to close this out, yes, you could argue, hey, is this one more challenge you need to overcome? But at the same time, it's been a series of challenges, like literally a series of challenges and like the proverbial series of challenges. But if they're going to be a series of a team, as everybody believes they can be, then these are the environments that they have to win in. Like, would you want to win at home if you're them and wrap it up neatly? Sure, you would. But at the same time, the further along you go in the playoffs, you're going to have to not only win these games on the road, but you're going to have to win series clinching games yep. on the road. But not only that, but it's about showing how do you recover from mistakes. And I know we're going to talk about other series, but if we can just real quick, we think about the conversation about the Dallas Stars just 5 days ago after game two. There was a question of, is this it? Are they about to get knocked out? Mm-hmm. Are they going to get swept? Are they going to lose in five? And now you look at where things are going with that series and you're just kind of like, well, no one's really too sure. But again, if you're the Dallas Stars and you are serious about being a cup contender, it's not only a series like this you have to win, but it's against opponents like that you have to win. And the Vancouver Canucks are no different.
Yeah, and you know, to be fair, I think the home team is 1-4 in this series so far, so it's not as if home ice advantage has been a dominant factor in this series. So to your point, you know, every chance for the Canucks to go back to Nashville, get a third win in Nashville's barn in that one. Last thing on the Canucks, no surprise here, but Quinn Hughes officially named one of the Norris Trophy candidates earlier today by the NHL, along with Roman Josi also in this series, and Cale Makar. I everything I hear is that this is probably going to be Quinn Hughes. He's going to win. Do you get the same sense? And is that the right decision in your view? Keep in mind, you're on Vancouver Radio here.
That's really, I thought I was on Prince George Radio and we were having WHL talk. No, but to be serious, in terms of Quinn Hughes, that's the feeling you get is everyone you talk to, you get the feeling if Quinn Hughes wasn't going to win, it's going to be really close. But it seems like a lot of people have said from start to finish, Quinn Hughes. And in terms of how this could play out, again, it's so hard to say because we don't have all the information. But when you think about what Quinn Hughes has done from start to finish, he has been extremely consistent. He's one of those defensemen who not only drives play, but his team really does need him to win. Not saying that isn't the case with Roman Josi and Cale Makar, because it absolutely is. But you just think about how the Canucks have turned things around so quickly, and he has been one of, if not the biggest reason why. And you think about that, you think about the minutes he plays, the production, everything that he encompasses all while doing this, while leading a team as a captain for the first time. There's a lot of compelling points as to why Quinn Hughes could win the Norris.
In conversation with ESPN's Ryan Clark here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. And I do want to look at some of the other series. And one of the most fascinating results in the first round so far to me has been, as I mentioned, Colorado taking care of Winnipeg in five games. And of course, you know, you go back coming out of game one of that series, all of the conversations about Georgiev and the Avs goaltending, he lets in seven goals. They narrowly lose that one. Then they come back and just obliterate Winnipeg in the next four games, right? 5-2, 6-2, 5-1, 6-3 last night to wrap it up and take the series 4-1. And I mean, a lot of the conversation about Connor Hellebuck, fair. He's almost certainly going to win the Vezina. And, you know, he lets in five goals in every game in that series. But also just Winnipeg's defense. I mean, they were one of, if not the best defensive teams in the NHL this year. And Colorado was just generating almost at will. What happened, in your view, in that series for Colorado to just completely take over and dominate Winnipeg offensively?
There's a couple of things. The first is the Avs felt like they were able to get the big period consistently. Mm. They were able to get those periods where they're able to get 3-4 goals. The second is the Jets had a hard time staying out of the penalty box. And it was interesting being in Denver because after game 3, Rick Bowness talked about this in the sense of you've got to be responsible. You can't take penalties. They will make you pay for it. And then at the end of game 4, this is probably the worst way to describe it, but like Rick Bowness sounded like that parent, like when you mess up, where he's like, you want to stay out late? Fine. These are the consequences. Whereas if in this case, he was like, you want to play a 3-quarter game? Okay. You want to take penalties? Okay. You're playing into what they do. And that's exactly what happened. Another component of this is something else too. It's the conversation around depth. And yes, we've talked about it a lot last playoffs, these playoffs, because it's important. But the Avs are able to rely on their entire roster, whereas it felt like with the Jets, they couldn't necessarily match that step for step in the sense of who are the goals going to come from, where is the production going to come from, what line was going to be able to step up in this situation. Whereas with the Avalanche, like, yes, for all the talk about the stars that they have, they were able to get that production from their second, third, fourth lines. They were able to get that production, whether it be offensively or defensively, from their second and third pairings in support of what they already have, which is such a difference from what they were in the playoffs this time last year. So those are all things. But then another thing to think about with the Winnipeg Jets is this. How do you get beyond the next step? Because the Jets are another one of these teams that last year backed into the playoffs. This year was emphatic in how they got into the playoffs. And now they're facing another offseason of, well, how do you take that next step? At the same time, other teams are asking that same question. And not only that, but when you look at their free agency situation, there's going to be some decisions they're going to have to make with players like Sean Monahan, Tyler Toffoli, as well as a number of members on that defense. And given they're only going to have so much cap space, seeing what ways the Winnipeg Jets can get creative to reconfigure a defense at a time in which you look at what Dallas has, what Vegas has, what the Avalanche has, what the Canucks have, what the Predators have, and depending on how things go in LA, maybe what the Oilers could have. Well, this series could also see the Kings lead to answering some questions, while the Blues think they're not that far away. Well, everybody's kind of curious about what's going on in Utah, because with that farm system and the money they could have, again, like, it's a lot of moving parts at once, but this is a question the Jets have to answer, especially when you look at the Western Conference and the landscape is getting tighter and tighter each and every season.
Yeah, I don't think the Wild want to take a step back, right? It's a great point about Utah as well, especially in that division. Like, that's going from a complete also-ran afterthought to an owner who's going to be extremely motivated to spend, to maybe make some trades out of the prospect capital, out of the draft picks. So that could be a fascinating team to watch in the Central Division. Yeah, I think it's a great point about Winnipeg as well. Like, how do they get over that hump? They had such a strong season, and then to leave in a disappointing result like this again, really, really frustrating for them. Now, Colorado will advance to play the winner of Dallas and Vegas. That has to be the most entertaining, the series that's being played at the highest level right now, I think, in the first round. What do you think is going to be the key in the final three games of that series?
Again, broken record, so apologies to everyone listening to this. But it really and truly is depth, because we saw this in game 4. You think about where a couple of Dallas's goals came from. It came from guys like Dadonov, whereas if you look at the Golden Knights, which was a strength last season for them, they've struggled to really replicate that depth in terms of getting those secondary and tertiary goals from beyond their top six and top pairing. So that's one. The second is, can Dallas keep up the aggressive amount of shots it's been able to get on Logan Thompson? You think about those first two games, believe Logan Thompson was, let's say what, less than 25 shots. And then, of course, they ramp it to 40. And now, of course, that leads to the change of Aiden Hill in net. So that's another thing. And then that leads to the third key is, are you going to get the Aiden Hill that helped you win the Stanley Cup last season if you're Vegas? Because, again, you think about what Logan Thompson has done. He's put them in a position to win, but of course the series is tied if they were up 2-0. So now it's a matter of seeing, like, can Aiden Hill and this move work, along with the move of bringing Alex Martinez back to the top pairing with Alex Pietrangelo and putting Noah Hanifin on the third pairing, which was the conversation in Skate this morning. So those seems like those are the big questions, is can the adjustments work for the Vegas Golden Knights?
You know, the other big question I have in the Western Conference right now, Ryan, is I can't help but looking at how things are developing and thinking it seems like things are breaking perfectly for the Edmonton Oilers. Now, I know they still have to finish off LA. They'll get a chance to do it tonight, but I look at, you know, the other series in their division, Vancouver and Nashville, has been so physical. It's going at least six games now. Those teams are hitting each other at absolutely every opportunity. And then on the other side of the bracket, you've got Vegas and Dallas in a real tough matchup in the first round. That team will have to go through Colorado in the second round. Like, it feels like if there's ever going to be a year for Edmonton, just the way it's setting up, I know it's early, there's a long way to go, but it feels like it's setting up for this to be their best opportunity to actually break out and come get out of the Western Conference Final.
It could be, but again, it's one of those, how is this going to look in the second round under Chris Knobloch? Because what you've seen in the first round in some ways has been a bit of a continuation of what you saw last year in the first round against the LA Kings, except for there have been times when the Oilers have looked a bit more dominant. So if that series gets done by this evening, which at this rate, who knows, but let's say if it does, and if you're the Oilers, you can get that rest. It's really just a matter of seeing then how is this going to look in the second round. And that's one of the big reasons you made a coaching change. Yes, it was trying to correct the ship and get back into the playoffs, which they were able to do. But now it's about, well, how much further can you go? You saw what they were able to do under Jay Woodcroft the last few years. Last year, they get knocked out in the second round against the Golden Knights. This year, if you're the Oilers, it's about, well, what lessons did you learn from that second round experience? But also, what can you take from this playoff series under a new coach that you feel can allow you to not only a chance of winning the second round, but having a chance of winning the West, if not the Cup altogether? And so what the Oilers, like, to your point, it's interesting to see how the rest of the West is setting up for them. But at the same time, it's also going to be even more fascinating to see how can they handle that second round matchup. Again, looking like it's going to get to the second round, but if it's going to get to the second round for them, how do you handle being in the second round and avoiding the mistakes of last season?
Just before we let you go, Ryan, one piece of non-playoff related news. I know Seattle Kraken making a coaching change this week, or at least dismissing Dave Haxtell, who's, you know, first coach in that franchise's history, three seasons, one playoff appearance. What was your reaction to the news? What direction in terms of the next coach do you think Ron Francis goes with that team?
It seemed like going into the final month of the season, you thought maybe Haxtell was going to be back, but when Ron Francis at his end of season press conference was non-committal about the future of the coaching staff, that's when you really, really, really started wondering what was going to happen. And now if you're the Seattle Kraken, you're about trying to find a head coach that can help you get back to the postseason, which, again, going back to where we just went a few minutes ago, all these teams in the West that believe that they have a legitimate shot. So if you're them, you're probably looking for someone who has had that experience of getting teams not only to the playoffs, but also finding someone who can help them score more goals. Because when you look at the Kraken's problem this season, it wasn't the goaltending when you look at the team's save percentage. Defensively, the underlying numbers are all there. It's offensively. Last season, the Seattle Kraken were second highest in the NHL with shooting percentage. This year, they were in the bottom four. That's such a drop that, A, it's about finding a system in which you're going to be able to create scoring chances and consistently create them. But also, it's about finding one that allows you to finish those scoring chances. And it's how you're able to really climb back into these conversations. Because the biggest problem they face, other than an inability to score goals, was it was inconsistency. A team that could be capable of losing 6, 7, 8 in a row was capable of winning 7, 8 in a row. And as much as you try to say, hey, that winning 7, 8 in a row shows that they can go on a run, well, losing those 6 or 7 in a row also shows you that there's a little bit of an extreme approach there. And so if you're them, it's about not only finding that consistency in terms of winning games, but it's about finding that consistency in scoring and finding a way for it to all work, because this season just showed how much of a disconnect it was from one piece of what they do compared to the other pieces of what they do.
Ryan, great stuff as always, man. Always appreciate it. And we'll chat next week. Hopefully Drancer will be available for that one. I know he was sad to miss you, but thanks for doing this. Have a great week.
Hey, you too. Thanks for having me.
That is ESPN's Ryan Clark covering the NHL and joining us throughout the playoffs every week here on the show. Always fun to chat with Ryan, and some interesting thoughts there at the end about the coaching change in Seattle and what they do next. There's been some really interesting kind of news and rumors out there in general about the NHL coaching carousel and what it could look like. I know some Mike Sullivan chatter. Could he be Pride out of Pittsburgh, that's had some cold water thrown on it. You know, Kevin Weeks stirring the pot a little bit, saying somebody might break Mike Babcock's record for compensation for an NHL coach. So that's going to be one to watch, certainly depending on who gets eliminated and when from the Stanley Cup playoffs. And yeah, by the way, Edmonton will have a chance to eliminate the LA Kings in Game 5 tonight at home. Vegas and Dallas, Game 5. That series, of course, tied 2-2, goes from Dallas tonight as well. All right, it is Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Get your text in. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber, with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street, or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center, or Arbutus in Vancouver online at DunbarLumber.com. This text comes in: if the real and best Pettersson showed up, this series would be over already. They need to get the lotto line together, and I'm very confident the other lines will outscore or at minimal break even against the lines that they face. That one's unsigned, and I think it's fair to say that if we'd seen the best version of Pettersson already in this series for even a couple of games, there's a good chance it might be over. Right? Like, you think about how close this series has been and how much of a game breaker and how much of an impact player Pettersson can be at his best. It's not hard to imagine that, yeah, you flip a couple moments, you flip even, 10 shifts from what we've seen from Pettersson to impact Pettersson over the course of this series. And there's a very good chance the Canucks could have this wrapped up, even go to last night, right? The shot on the 2-1. If that goes in, are we having a very different conversation about Elias Pettersson today? So I completely understand the emphasis on that going into Game 6 and potentially Game 7 here to wrap up this series. I just don't know that the lotto line is the way to get the best out of Elias Pettersson, because I know we all remember how incredible they were when Rick Tocchet first put them together in January. I think it was in New Jersey, Game 1, and it was the Islanders, it was the Rangers, and they looked awesome. But the results trailed off pretty quickly after that. The Canucks kept winning games on that trip, but the underlying numbers for the lotto number, this kind of incredible production, wasn't quite what it was in those first three games. And since then, we have been, we've seen Rick Tocchet be very reluctant to go to the lotto line. Yes, we've seen it in minutes. I think they got about 2.5 minutes on the ice in that game last night. But even then, they get a few shots, but were there any grade A scoring chances generated? And as much as there's frustration with Pugh Suter, his lack of goal scoring, Miller, Besser, and Suter have been far and away this team's best line in this round. It's not even close. Do they need to have some more bottom line? Yes. Would you like to see JT Miller score at even strength? Yes, absolutely. Would you like to see Pugh Suter kind of get the monkey off his back and pot a goal? Yeah, of course you would, but it's really hard to have complaints about what that line has done from a process standpoint. So if you go to the lotto line, you're breaking up a line that's been good, that's been your best 5-on-5 line clearly so far against Nashville, and you're going to a trio that, the last time they really had notable success together was in January. Even in this series, they've had minutes, but they haven't really made anything happen in them. So it's not clear to me that it's an easy solution to get Petey going is just, hey, throw him up on the lotto line. And then you get into the conversation of, well, are you stacking the top six too much? What can you reasonably get from your bottom six? I think that's all fair as well. But look, I think it would be a fine trade if you had a really high degree of confidence that that line would cook together, that that line would absolutely dominate when they are out together. But I don't know that we've seen enough recently, or really since that, 3-4-5 game sample in January from the lotto line, to think that that's going to be the case. I don't think that's the automatic cure for whatever's going on with Elias Pettersson right now, is putting him up on the lotto line. And I completely understand Rick Tocchet's reluctance to do so. Now, look, that doesn't mean it's invalid or, unfair to talk about other potential lineup tweaks. I'm really curious to see what gets rolled out at practice in Nashville tomorrow. Again, I've made it clear my expectation is probably not a lot, but you never know. You never stop tinkering. You never stop thinking of different ideas that you could try. And it's going to be really interesting to see what we get tomorrow at Nashville. All right. Send your text in 650-650. I'll read a whole bunch. going into, in the next segment as we get ready for game six down in Nashville between the Canucks and the Predators. What are you watching for in game six? What are your big questions? What can swing this series for the Vancouver Canucks? What will help them close things out in Nashville in game six? Let me know. Vibe check, strategy, player, whatever you think, whatever you want to text in about, hit me up at 650-650. Dom, did I need another Avenue read here? No, nothing? All right, great. I'll go to break then. Come back for more. It is Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd here live from the Kintec studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver. Online at DunbarLumber.com. Canucks lose last night. Now we look ahead to game six down in Nashville, where they will try again to close out the Nashville Predators and advance to the second round. And you can get your texts in. I'm solo here for the final segment of the show. Drance is en route to Nashville, so he'll be a part of the show tomorrow with some updates and insight from what goes on at Canucks practice tomorrow down in Nashville. The team's traveling today as well. So Rick Tocchet will speak today, but it won't be until about, I think, 5 o'clock our time here that we'll hear from the Canucks head coach. So get your thoughts in about what you're expecting to see, what you want to see, what you think the Canucks need to do in game six to wrap this series up. And this text comes in: give the keys to this series to Shelovs. His swagger and confidence is infectious to the team, and it's something that Casey doesn't have. I think that's a good point, right? And I don't want to pile on Casey DeSmith because he played really, really well, in game three in this series against Nashville to earn that win, right? Bouncing back from the game two loss, gets the Canucks that crucial win on the road to put them up 2-1. But I think that point about just the ability to inspire confidence is a good one. And again, I'm not saying that the team, you know, drops their shoulders or hangs their head or anything like that just because Casey DeSmith is in there, but you just see how Artur Shelov looks in goal, right? And you even saw him, you know, flashing the glove on some of those big stops. He looks so calm. He looks so confident when he's on his game that I can understand how it could have that effect on the rest of the team. I think fundamentally here, now, if I had to bet right now, I would bet on Artur Shelov getting the start. I think there's absolutely an argument to be made for, okay, saying, you know what, we think you're just a hair better than Casey DeSmith right now. The upside difference is enough that you're our starter until Thatcher Demko gets back and we're going to run with you. I think that's a defensible decision. I also think that the Canucks can win with either guy. Well, I mean, they've shown that. They've gotten wins with both guys. Both goalies are 1-1 in this series. If they play defensively like they have at their best in this series, and in particular like they did in game three in Nashville, they can absolutely win with either goalie in the crease. I think Shelov's probably the better option at this point, but I think it's also a decent position for the Canucks to be in. I don't think they're hooped no matter who ends up in the crease there. And, you know, again, good point by the texter about just that confidence, that swagger that Artur Shelov has. And we know that's something that's important to Ian Clark. I know Drance has mentioned this a lot, right? Like, Ian Clark obviously hyper-focused on the technical aspects, but the mental aspects of goaltending as well. And one of them is give your team confidence. Don't look shaky, right? Forget letting in bad goals. Don't even look like you're about to let in a bad goal. Make those big stops and do it with confidence and give your team something to build on. And I think Artur Shelov is showing the signs that that's the type of goalie he is going to be as his career develops here. Laura in Burnaby texts in, I think it is fair to try PD with Garland and Joshua for a couple of games, see if something resets his confidence and he is good to go with Hoglander and Mikheyev again. Maybe he just needs a spark to get going again. That's from Laura in Burnaby. I definitely think a bounce would go a long way for Elias Pettersson, because we can have the debate and we can have the speculation about physically what's going on with Elias Pettersson at this point. But I think there's obviously also a mental component. Has it looked better the last couple of games? Yes. Is it where it needs to be? No, absolutely not. So there's obviously still another level. But I think the fact that we're seeing those signs of improvement shows that while there might be a physical element, it's not just physical, right? Because it's not as if he's been better in the last couple of games because his physical condition has improved. Right. I think it's he's focusing more on moving his feet. He's doing those things that Rick Tocchet has spoken about. He just needs to do it a lot more and a lot more consistently and actually make it count on the scoreboard. Does putting in with Joshua and Garland help that? And could it have this kind of snowball domino effect where, you know, he gets that bounce, he gets that nice feed from Garland below the goal line, puts in a goal, and all of a sudden that classic version, you know, vintage Petey is unlocked for the Canucks? Maybe. I keep harping on this, but I get why Rick Tocchet wants to keep his three best playmakers, which Miller, obviously, Connor Garland, and Elias Pettersson when he's on his game. Those are the team's three best playmakers. I get why he wants to keep them on separate lines. Because otherwise, as soon as you go Lindholm, Mikheyev, Hoglander, something like that, you're not getting offense from that line. Or at least you can't really have any reasonable expectation of offense from that line. Lindholm, I think, can be a really nice fit alongside Garland and Joshua. We've seen him, you know, be able to get open, use that shot that he has. But in terms of being a creative force, you know, setting others up, elevating his teammates offensively, I don't think we're going to see that from Elias Lindholm in this series. I think you need a player like Connor Garland in that bottom six role, although really they've been elevated to the top six at this point, to make sure you have that punch throughout your lineup. Now, again, if things don't go your way early in game six, or if you lose game six and you're coming back to game seven, then I think all bets are off. Because then you're in, okay, it doesn't really matter what the best theoretical version of our lineup is. We need to figure out a way to win right now. And then I think you can go completely back to the drawing board. You have to figure out a way, you know, you put your best players in a position to win. You can really reduce the bottom six's minutes. You can lean on the top six in a situation like that. I'm fighting off a sneeze here. My goodness. So in an elimination game, sure. But again, Rick Tocchet has been emphatic this whole series that they don't need to make that many tweaks, that the players have the tools, the players just need to execute. Even yesterday, he said, hey, we need to bear down. Just need to bear down on some of those chances. We're shooting high, need to shoot a little low, need to hit the net. When we're trying that slap pass, you know, it's there, but we're just not quite executing. And I think if I had to bet again, I would bet on seeing, you know, pretty much the same lineup rolled out there in practice in Nashville tomorrow, because that's what Rick Tocchet has done so far this series. He believes in this lineup. He believes they have the ability to get the job done.
Is it kind of bordering on the definition of insanity, though? Especially if this series goes south.
No, because they're up 3-2.
Right, but if this series goes south and no drastic changes are made,
well,
and PD ends with 1 point in seven games.
That's why I think this is a very different conversation if we're going into a game seven. Because then...
But like, then you're changing things into a game seven?
Well, that's what you got to do sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, that's what you got to do. And honestly, I mean, I thought, like, did they play their best game of the series last night? Game one's probably the only other option.
They played their best period. Even though they didn't score.
Yeah. It's just like Rick Tocchet has been... I think Rick Tocchet is pretty good at focusing on the process rather than the results, right? Even in the inverse situation where you play well, but maybe somebody didn't have a great game, and he said, yeah, I'll take somebody out in that situation. I don't think you need to make changes just because you lost a game, right? I think you can look at the process. You can look at the scoring chances generated. Was it enough? No, I'm not saying they played a perfect game. I'm not saying they got robbed or anything like that, but it was the best game they've played, the most consistent game they've played in this series. It doesn't feel, I don't look at this as a situation where it's like, oh, you got to make a change going into game six.
For
They're
sure.
Still up.
I just look at it kind of in the sense of when the way he speaks about it is like, oh, this is a really good learning experience. This is a learning experience in the playoffs. And I think this fan base is kind of like, okay, great, we're learning, but we're up 3-2. We want to win two right now. I'm done with learning. Let's get some results right now too, especially in this situation where on paper you're the better team, you have the lead. Let's try to close this out. And what isn't working is that the best player, arguably for the Canucks offensively, maybe JT Miller, but Elias Pettersson, has not gotten going at all.
And they're still up 3-2, I think is what it comes down to, right? Like, again, you can win. I think Rick Tocchet fundamentally believes that they can win games against Nashville with the lineup he's sending out there right now, right? Like, I think that's what it comes down to, is that he doesn't necessarily see a problem to be solved in terms of the lineup. It's what the players are doing. It's the execution. Now, I think another part of this, because, like, look, again, as I said, going into game seven, that's when you really have to be willing to think outside the box. You have to really be willing to try things, because then you're in a true, you know, by definition, must-win game. I think the other part of this is there's not a ton of great options. Right? Like, we get a lot of people texting in about, you know, Pugh Suter, his goal scoring record in the last 20, Ilya Mikheyev, his goal scoring record in the last half of the season. And that's all fair. Now, Pugh Suter, I think, is contributing to that line. Ilya Mikheyev flashes, but just a seemingly complete inability to finish on his chances and make it count. But, I mean, Ilya Mikheyev's already been promoted to the top six. The guy there before was Sam Lafferty. I don't feel a lot more confident. I know he has more goals than Ilya Mikheyev this year, but I haven't liked a lot of what I've seen from Sam Lafferty when he's been up next to Elias Pettersson. Vasily Podkolzin, I mean, he was just sent down to Abbotsford. I know his name comes up in our inbox a lot as well. He didn't have a goal in the NHL this year. He had 2 points. Did he show some flashes? Sure. But if you're turning to Vasily Podkolzin as your kind of, we're going to plug this guy in next to Elias Pettersson, and that's going to be the thing to get him going, I think that's a bit of a Hail Mary at this point. So that's, like, if there was an obvious solution, I'd have a lot more time for the change things up, PD's got to have different line mates conversation.
I just feel like last night was one of those nights where it's been, many people have said it, like, Pettersson maybe had his best game of the series last night. It was just very obvious to me watching the game that his line mates aren't great. Like, Hoglander was in the AHL last year. Mikheyev.
Nils Hoglander scored 24 goals this year.
But he is not playing like the same player right now. Like, he looks very frantic and frenzied when he gets the puck on his stick. He's throwing the body around. That's great. But he still was an AHL player last year. Mikheyev has one goal in 2024, and that's who Pettersson is centering. So where do you stand on maybe the potential of putting the Lotto line together? Because they played shifts in the offensive zone together. I think they had 3 shots on goal together. And you have Lindholm with Joshua and Garland. Like, where do you stand on maybe
doing that? Again, like, if I thought with a really high degree of confidence, you put the Lotto line together and you're getting this instant magic, then I'd be like, okay, go for it. Because you only need to win one game. You boost their minutes. You give them the favorable matchup. You use Lindholm in a shutdown role to try to neutralize Ryan O'Reilly, and you hope those guys get you a goal or two to get you across the finish line. I can see the logic there. I just don't think it's a guarantee or anything close to a guarantee that you're going to get that magic, right? That instant chemistry, that instant offense. We've seen how many minutes have they played in this series? I don't have it in front of me, but, you know, they've played a fair amount of minutes together in this series. And I don't know, they had 3 shots last night, but have they ever looked super dangerous? Have they ever really, like, stacked heavy shifts together or generated a bunch of grade A chances? I'm not sure they have.
No.
Miller's done it way more with Pugh Suter out there.
It might change if they start together, though. If it's just not like, hey,
maybe
get over the boards together.
I think that's a big kind of, I think that's a kind of a wing and a prayer situation, though, at this point, right? And I just don't think the Canucks are in that situation. Like, I don't think they need to throw a Hail Mary just yet, I guess is my point.
I just am kind of uncomfortable with the idea of, if game 6 doesn't go their way, okay, now we're going to change everything for game 7. Like, that seems weird to me. Just like, okay, we got one game, let's change everything for the one game we have to win. Maybe I'd rather see it going into Friday night to see if it works. And if it doesn't, then you know that you can play the other way too, just to experiment with it one time before you have your final possible game.
I understand that. And look, maybe he decides to maybe he decides to change things up going in to tomorrow. But to me, like, we're focusing on the pure upside, right? Because we all have this vision of the Lotto line in our mind, going back to the 2019-2020 season when they were so good together, you know, going back to January when they got put together and they just had those incredible moments together. But again, if I had to rank how confident I am that they're going to outperform Miller, Besser, and Suter, I don't know, not confident at all. And then at that point, there's downside risk, mm-hmm. right? Like you're risking torpedoing or taking away the unit that has been really good for you, that has been actually generating a lot of scoring chances for what I think is a pretty uncertain return here.
There was also 13 high danger scoring chances last night. Like Saros made some saves specifically on Besser and Suter at the side of the net that were like, that was a fantastic save. So I know that there was 20 shots only last night, but an argument fairly could be made on Tocchet's side. You know, I'm playing devil advocate to myself here that they're generating chances.
That's the thing.
They're just not finishing.
That's the thing, right? So like I completely understand the logic of the best version of this team has Miller, Pettersson, Lindholm down the middle, right? Miller's doing his job at least to an extent, which is to generate those chances. Yes, they need to finish more at 5-on-5, 100% I agree, but typically when you're generating those types of chances, when you're spending that much time in the offensive end, that's going to come. Miller's doing his job. Lindholm, has that line been amazing? No, but they've had moments, and generally they've done a pretty good job against Ryan O'Reilly. So I think you can say Elias Lindholm in that line is doing his job. You're waiting for Elias Pettersson to do his job, right? Which is not just have some nice moments, not just show flashes. It's to score goals. It's to produce. He's in a favorable situation in a lot of ways, not necessarily with his line mates, although I absolutely think he can find a way to produce with Nils Höglander. The other line mate's a different conversation, to be fair. But, you know, he's playing against Colton Sissons a lot out there. You know, no disrespect to Colton Sissons, North Van guy. He's had a really good career, but that's not the caliber of player
right.
that we expect to shut down Elias Pettersson. So I get what Rick Tocchet is basically. He's throwing down the gauntlet, I think, to Pettersson. He's saying, like, look, other guys are doing their job. You're in a good situation here, at least in terms of the opposition. We're not going to upset the apple cart entirely and completely change things. Just to try to give you a spark, you have the tools you need to go out and do that yourself. And I think that's fair. I think it's fair, especially when you are still up in the series. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And this is a fair point, right? It says, even if the Lotto line isn't magic, why not put them together if you're already getting nothing from the Pettersson line? A line of Suter, McCabe, and Höglander won't give you much, but neither is the PD line otherwise. I think that's the best counter argument, right, to the idea of you can't punt on the bottom six is you're already not really getting anything from the bottom six, right, with Elias Pettersson there. So why not load up and just try to juice more offense from the top six? I get that. Again, it's just the downside risk of what if you take away the chances that that Miller unit is getting, right? What if all of a sudden Miller isn't dominating? As somebody else texted in, I don't have the name in front of me here because we've got a lot of texts coming in, but made the technical point, which I know Drance would be a fan of, the pedantic point that we haven't actually seen the true Lotto line this year because it's been Miller at center and not on the wing. And do they need to try that? Put Miller on the wing, let him wreak havoc along the boards, get Pettersson in the middle, and see if that sparks something. Miller's just been too good at center this year to move him, right? Like, I just realistically, you know, I've seen people in the past suggest, like, move Lindholm up, move Miller to the wing. I think Miller's been too much of a weapon for the Canucks down the middle this year. He's thrived in that role too much to realistically be taken out of that spot in the playoffs. Like, he's your number one C right now, and he's doing well. Not perfect, not an incredible performance, but I don't think you can justify moving Miller to the wing again just to try to get Elias Pettersson going, as important as Elias Pettersson is. Hal texts in, I agree with most of what you're saying, except Suter has played his best as a bottom six centerman for some reason, and those lines actually produce. It is a fair point that before it was Bluger, Joshua, and Garland, Suter was centering that line. They weren't racking up the points at the same rate, but they were really controlling play at a high rate when they were doing that still. That was just once Bluger got on that line, then the puck started going in. But I think they were doing a lot of the same really good things early in the season when Pew Suter was there. And again, I don't want to sit here and say that Pew Suter is the ideal solution as a top six winger for a playoff team, for a team that has designs on going deep and making a Stanley Cup run. I don't think that's true. But is it potentially the best of the options the Canucks have in front of them? Given the way that line is playing, yeah, I think it might be. It would be absolutely ideal if you had another bona fide top six scoring winger that you could plug in that spot and use Pugh Suter as that kind of Swiss Army knife to move around the lineup, play him at center, use him in the bottom six, whatever the case is. That would be the ideal situation. I just don't think they have that player available. I don't think that's an option available to Rick Tocchet and the coaching staff right now, and I think that's why you're probably going to see, oh, hey, maybe I'll have to come on the show and eat my words tomorrow. Maybe we'll see a completely different lineup configuration. Maybe we'll see the lotto line, but I'm not betting on it. I'm not betting on it right now. This text comes in. Jamie, I think it's time for the Canucks' top players to take over. A team usually sets up their players as pairs and lines, but I think it's time we start throwing our fastball and stack the top two lines. Eager to hear your thoughts. So I agree with the first part. It's time for the Canucks' top players to take over. And that's what we've seen in big moments where they've won the game. You know, game three, JT Miller and Brock Besser making magic on the power play, right? That gets them the two goals. They hold on. Game four at the end, JT Miller making plays, Quinn Hughes making plays, Brock Besser scoring big goals, incredibly big goals, to tie that game late, and that ends up getting them the win. Would you throw the Garland and Joshua and Lindholm in there as the best players? No, but certainly that second wave of top players have made big plays in moments as well. That still, I think, is the Canucks' biggest edge in this series. Can be Quinn Hughes is a game breaker even more than Roman Josi is, right? JT Miller is a game breaker even more than Philip Forsberg is. Those guys are incredible, don't get me wrong, but the Canucks do just have that slight edge. And we've seen it in the games that the Canucks have won. It's been their top players getting it done with spectacular plays, with really, really impressive performances in those big moments. They're going to need more of that. Like, for all of the tactical talk and, you know, hey, like, are they taking too many slap passes? Nashville's fronting. What do they need to do differently? They're going to need big time performances from those guys. I said it as soon as Thatcher Demko went down, was injured, right? They're going to need big time performances from JT Miller, Quinn Hughes, Elias Pettersson, Brock Besser. Besser's probably been the best of the bunch. Miller and Hughes have had those moments. They need moments from Elias Pettersson as well. They're going to need moments from Elias Pettersson to close out this series, or at least to go deep if they are able to close out this series. Okay, thanks for all the texts that came in. Always enjoy it when I'm solo here and you guys bring it with the text. Makes it a lot of fun. Remember, Drancer is en route to Nashville, so he will be on the show tomorrow, and we will see. Maybe I was completely wrong with my read on what Rick Tocchet was thinking. That'll be fun if that's the case tomorrow, but we will be back tomorrow here on the station to continue to preview a big game six down in Nashville, which goes Friday. And by the way, people asking any word on when game six is going to be on Friday, still listed as to be determined on NHL.com. There definitely will be a Dallas Vegas game, right? There has to be a game six in that series. So that one I would expect would be later. There might be an Edmonton LA game, which also would be later because that would be in LA. So I would expect the Canucks 4:30, something like that. That's just a guess, though. We'll see when the NHL gets around to announcing it. Okay, we'll be back tomorrow here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.